From Hook and Bullet to Policy and Science, we're here to discuss and dissect all matters of importance to Montana's rugged landscape and the people and wildlife that call it home. This is Montana Untamed. AI has come for the animals. When the Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks unveiled its 43rd annual photo issue of Montana Outdoors magazine at the beginning of the month, the magazine carried an explanation on page one. Magazine staff editor Tom Dixon wrote that the magazine had gone to great lengths to verify that photos submitted for the issue were, in fact, photos. Dixon's concern was that images produced by generative artificial intelligence, otherwise known as AI programs, that create new material in response to a prompt, now often appear as realistic as actual photographs and could be submitted to the magazine for publications. With me today is Joshua Murdoch, natural resources reporter for the Missoulian newspaper, who recently wrote on how artificial intelligence poses risks and threats to legitimate wildlife photography. Josh, let's start with your reporting on Montana Outdoors and this column from the editor, Tom Dixon.
Right, Tom. So editor Dixon kind of outlined two concerns in his editor's note in this year's issue of Montana Outdoors. The first one was just generally, you know, kind of indicating or suggesting that using artificial intelligence to generate images and then submitting them as wildlife photos just kind of goes against the idea of wildlife photography. You know, he pointed out that just like they don't accept photos of captive animals and they don't accept photos of animals from outside of Montana, they also don't want AI-generated images. You know, the way he put it was that instead of an intrepid photographer trekking into the Purcells to capture a stunning photo of a Canada lynx in its natural surroundings, someone in their pajamas can bang one out on a smartphone while waiting for their coffee to brew. So, you know, there's this idea that, you know, using these programs to create images of wildlife is just totally against the premise and the challenge of actually getting out and doing wildlife photography. But he also had a deeper concern, and that was that AI-generated images could be used to totally subvert wildlife conservation and management, or even to kind of debase the scientific foundation that supports those things. You know, what he suggested was, what if someone made realistic-looking images of the black-footed ferret, which is the rarest mammal in North America? What if somebody made images of that animal, you know, playing in great numbers in a park in Missoula? I mean, that would totally undercut the argument that that animal is incredibly endangered and in need of conservation efforts. If you could generate what looked to be photos of that animal playing, you know, in great numbers in human environments. So, yeah, that was kind of his twofold concern there, was not just protecting the integrity of their publication, but also, you know, what people could try and do to, you know, make misinformation using AI images in the world of conservation and wildlife management.
So, yeah, I mean, a concern is that, you know, the rarity and the elusiveness of, like, say, Canada lynx, like you mentioned, if there's just photos of them everywhere, that kind of takes away from how actually rare and elusive they are. So I guess, how do they go about weeding these out? You know, because, I mean, this technology is pretty sophisticated. I mean, sophisticated to a certain point, right? I think to the common eye, people wouldn't even tell a difference between an AI-generated image and, you know, an image taken by a photographer. So how did they weed out these images? Or how would they? I mean, I guess that supposes that they got these images, but how would they weed these images out?
Exactly. So I had a really good conversation the other week when I was reporting the story with Luke Duran, and he's been the art director for Montana Outdoors Magazine for 22 years. And he's, you know, the primary person responsible for the call for photos that goes out for each year's photo annual. And, you know, he explained to me that he's not aware of the magazine receiving any AI-generated images so far. But like you said, because they're becoming so realistic, they're on the lookout for them, just in case one were to be submitted. One of the things they really have working for them in making that less likely is that they work with, you know, a group of regular contributing photographers to that magazine. And so it's people that they've built a bit of a relationship with in many cases. And, you know, they hold them to other ethical standards anyway, even before AI, like I mentioned, not shooting captive animals, not manipulating images with Photoshop, you know, photographing animals that are actually in the state of Montana, all of these things. And then further, he told me that, you know, when he gets his selection of images, he checks each one. He asks the photographers to specify exactly what species it is, generally when and where and how they got the photo. Things like that that might weed out somebody who just sat at a computer and generated an image. And he can also look in the metadata that's attached to the image to try and make sure it's actually a photograph.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess have AI-generated wildlife images kind of slipped through in the media world that we've seen yet?
So
I mean, it's a pretty new technology.
Right. They have. I'm going to start first with Montana Outdoors specifically. You know, he said they haven't received that they know of any AI-generated images, and they would never knowingly feature one. If they did. But he did say that, you know, for years, people have occasionally submitted images, photos that were then later tweaked in programs like Photoshop. And generally he catches those. He said every once in a while, one has slipped into publication in Montana Outdoors. He said there was an example of what he called a beautiful underwater photo of some cutthroat trout that they ran in the magazine, and some readers pointed out that there was a few distinctive pebbles on the stream bed that they noticed were repeated next to each other multiple times. So that photo had been played around with a little bit. And also there are times where people will submit photos where maybe the content of the photo hasn't been altered, but they've just been overprocessed with software. The colors have been changed a little bit, or they've been excessively darkened or lightened with a computer program. And so he generally declines to publish those as well. In other arenas, though, photos have slipped by for sure. So there is an example in 2023. Just about a year ago, last spring, the international human rights group Amnesty International, they created and shared AI-generated images that they said showed police brutality against protesters in Colombia that had happened 2 years prior in 2021. And, I mean, the images that they shared online were really compelling, and at first glance, they looked real. They were super dramatic. And the police brutality in Colombia in 2021 was totally real. It was well documented. But Amnesty's images weren't real. So journalists and photographers and scholars on journalism and on misinformation and democracy, they just absolutely ripped into Amnesty for what they argued was undermining the credibility of the actual photos that were taken in 2021 of the protests and the police brutality. And those Amnesty took down the images. But other times, AI-generated images have been more successful and not called out like Amnesty's were. So Boris Eldigsen, who's a German artist, last year, he won the Sony World Photography Awards creative photo category. He submitted a black and white image of two women like posing for a portrait with one standing behind the other. And so he won And after he won, he admitted that he used OpenAI's DALL-E 2 image generation program to create that image. It was not a photograph at all. It was all created off of text prompts that he put in, another photo manipulation. And he said that he entered into the contest to see if the contest was prepared to weed out faked photos. So as soon as he won, he came clean. He did not accept the prize. But,
oh, wow.
You know, it seems like he proved his point. And a similar thing happened also last year, which is really the first year that we're dealing with, you know, public access to robust image generation software from AI. There was a content agency called Absolute AI. They won the DigiDirect photo competition with an AI-generated image that looks like just this spectacular aerial drone shot of surfers at sunrise right at the edge of a beach and in the crashing waves. I mean, it looked amazing, and it looked exactly like, you know, a photograph. And so they won. And then as soon as they won, they refused the prize, and they explained that they entered the contest to prove that AI images had become so realistic that they could be entered into and even win a photo competition.
So, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, in that cutthroat trout photo, Photoshop's been around for a while. People have been tweaking images for years. So what's the big deal with AI? How is this like a new, you know, a new world when it comes to manipulated imagery?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the problem with the challenge that AI poses with these images and what people are fearing is going to come with them is that this technology is relatively new, and the software is already creating images that are really, really near to being photorealistic, or in some cases are photorealistic. I mean, with, you know, some of these photos that have won competitions. And in fact, in 2022, there was a Romanian landscape photographer who used the program Stable Diffusion, which is a different generative AI software that creates images based on text prompts. And he created these spectacular landscape images. And I reviewed them, and it's, you know, I don't really think I could tell that they aren't photographs. So the tricky part is that, you know, in the past, creating a realistic looking fake photo, it took a mastery of Photoshop software or some other really, really expensive software, and it took a really long time. Now, you know, you can get a realistic or almost realistic looking AI image with, you know, a couple keystrokes on your laptop or cell phone and about a 10-second processing time on relatively affordable software. Actually, in reporting this story, I purchased a one-month subscription to the Stable Diffusion software. It cost me $13. And I plugged in some one-sentence, I mean, less than 10-word descriptions of some of my and other Missoulian photographers' wildlife images. And each time it took less than 10 seconds for the program to spit out a realistic or nearly realistic image that, you know, matched the description of the actual real photograph that somebody had taken. And so in the print version and online version, you know, readers can see those next to each other. And those were made, you know, people who are really trying to fake images, they can generate something like that. They can incorporate some real imagery in there, and they can then spend as much time as they want tweaking and refining the image. I didn't do that. I just took what it spit out at first and ran with that. And some of them are almost believable. Sometimes there's still things that give it away. I mean, in one picture of a mountain goat, there's a log that just inexplicably fades or disappears into timber and brush that's behind it. And if you look close at that, you don't think that's real. There's a black bear cub that looks mostly realistic until you see that each paw has about 8 claws on it. and you realize that that's not right. And that's kind of, you know, along with these challenges of AI, in other realms where, like, AI is notorious for messing up human hands in images or things like bicycles or railroad tracks. It can't quite get right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Duran, the art editor or art director for the magazine, he told me, you know, in a year's time, I don't think that's going to be true. He thinks that, you know, in a year or two here, we're going to get to the point where the images are pretty indistinguishable from photos. And, you know, he and Dixon aren't the only people with these concerns. There's a gentleman, Alan Murabayashi, who he's a co-founder of the image platform Photo Shelter, and he's also a former judge of the Audubon Photography Awards. And he wrote in Audubon's magazine last year that he also agrees that generative AI poses a threat to conservation because it will totally undermine, he believes, the longstanding role that photography has played in verifying and illustrating conservation concerns. So, you know, the argument is that AI erodes trust in photography because you don't know what's real and what's not. So that's going to make people distrustful even of real photos. So, yeah, that's the challenge. I mean, we're only 1 or 2 years into having these generative AI images, and they've gone from being obviously fake to now, in many cases, they look real. And so the question is, you know, what's going to happen pretty quickly when everything, you know, all these images do totally look real? We're already kind of seeing issues with that outside of wildlife and conservation. Right after Hamas attacked Israel on October 7th, and then Israel began bombing and invading Gaza, AI-generated images that were purported to be real images, I mean, they just blew up online and helped spread misinformation. Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's former attorney, he just got busted last month for having his lawyer submit a court filing for which he gave a bunch of made-up case citations that he got from AI. And the judge called it out for being totally made up. They weren't cases that ever existed. You know, even for publications, Sports Illustrated was busted for publishing AI-generated content under purported bylines of supposed writers that actually were also generated by AI.
Right.
Yeah, they never existed. And the newspaper company Gannett, one of their papers in Columbus, Ohio, experimented with AI, and it ended up making up fake sports stories. So, yeah, the fear is that that kind of thing is going to happen in wildlife and conservation photography. And if it looks realistic, how do we grapple with that?
Right, right. So, I mean, throughout this reporting, though, was there any good that came about in the realm of AI-generated wildlife photography?
Yeah, I mean, there are some ways in which this technology is being used for good. And you know, it's happening in other fields outside of wildlife and conservation. But, you know, specifically in that field, you know, there are researchers who are able to use not necessarily the generative AI, where you put in a prompt and it makes something new, but other, you know, AI or automated machine learning that can perform image recognition, you know, especially with like remote camera trap setups and all the data that comes from that, the thousands or tens of thousands or even more images or video or audio or whatever that's, you know, generated by all these remote cameras. You know, generally people have to go through that one by one, you know, individually, just in painstaking processes. Now there are researchers who are working to train AI programs to identify animals in images and even what the animals are doing, how many of them there are, do they look like, you know, mature adults or juveniles, and, you know, kind of compile that data automatically with some human oversight and prompts to help get the program started. So, yeah, one of the things that Murabayashi, the tech executive and former photo judge, one of the things he pointed out was that, you know, people are using AI to, you know, to collect these data, especially in super remote areas. And they're also using AI modeling to get maybe better models or ideas about threats for poaching. And actually, as far back as 2018, Julia John, who was a science writer then at the Wildlife Society, she wrote a fascinating piece about how scientists were beginning to use like I said, using AI to go through all this data. And so that was an early study, 6 years ago now. The scientist that she talked with then said that they'll have humans handle some of the harder to detect images. They'll kind of show the AI program, hey, here's what we're looking at in these images, here's what we're looking for, and then they can let the program kind of take it from there and pull this data way more efficiently than humans were able to do before by reviewing each photo themselves. It's not specifically AI, but Luke Duran, the photo director, art director for the magazine, he made an interesting point to me that I had not thought about before, but I think is really interesting. He sees a little bit of a blurred line that's existed for years with those remote camera traps. He pointed out that even though a photographer has to position the camera and intentionally compose a photo, that's been a case for years where the photographer isn't actually taking the photo. An animal mm-hmm. triggers it. An animal triggers it when it walks by. The photographer isn't, snapping that photo themselves. And he noted that they do accept remote camera photos. And he said that blurs the lines a little bit for
right,
him.
Right.
But he pointed out a lot of times that's the only way to get photos close up of, really shy or reclusive animals like wolverines or mountain lions. So.
Right. Well, hey, thanks, Josh. It's a little dystopian, but it's definitely an interesting look at where things might be going. At least at this early stage, there's still a high regard for actual imagery, and kind of a weeding out of what is, digitally manipulated and digitally created.
Certainly. And, there is, I don't know if this is, positive or a negative, but there certainly is an entertaining side to the AI image generation as well. And readers can also see this in Thursday's print edition, which was the 10th or online. After I finished making some of the AI generated images of spoofs of our wildlife photos, I played around for a couple hours and just put some really ridiculous prompts in to see what it would generate. And I got some pretty entertaining photos, or not photos, totally fake images.
Right.
of a grizzly bear riding a motorcycle on a highway, and a grizzly bear straddling a rocket, shooting off and everything. And it was pretty fun to make those and actually run them in print 2 days ago. I thought that was pretty funny.
So, nice.
But yeah, the concern for, I also had it make some wildlife photos, landscape photos. I said, foggy sunrise in Glacier National Park in autumn. So no people and no wildlife in there. And the images it spit out are of mountains and, skylines that don't exist in that park.
Oh, really?
But if you didn't know that, you'd think it was Glacier National Park. They look like
right.
real photos. The mountains, the terrain, the slopes, and everything. The topography looks like a scene from Glacier. And if you didn't know that, that combination of peaks or valleys or whatever in that configuration didn't actually exist in real life, I think most people would totally believe it was a real picture.
Right, right.
And it took about 10 seconds in one sentence.
All right, man. Well, hey, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Montana Untamed is a podcast from the newsrooms of Lee Enterprises Montana Newspapers. Visit any of our websites or subscribe wherever podcasts are found.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.